But the thing that I worry about is, to me, when Dr. Wesley was explaining that exercise, I immediately had brain lock because I don't know how you draw an Albertan. I don't know how that's, do you live in Alberta? Oh, I would draw a picture of the province and a stick man inside of it and be done with the whole thing. But even with the significance of the 2015 election, there's some inconvenient realities that I think have to be acknowledged at the same time. I mean, the NDP's total number of votes grew. There's no question about that. And it still wasn't enough. And it comes back to that truth in Alberta politics, that the only way a conservative government isn't elected is when that conservative vote is split. And I mean, the 2019 election, I think was to me, and this is where I'm going to ask you to challenge me, Dr. Snegovsky, if I'm wrong. But to me, that only proves the point that if the illusion that all conservatives are the same is successfully manufactured for even a short period of time leading up to a provincial election, that illusion will create a provincial government. We're seeing that illusion fracture to some degree. I don't know if we'll see it fracture enough that it will create enough room for a party to come up the middle like the NDP did, or could potentially again. But that's the bottom line is that if Jason Kenney and the UCP are able to convince conservatives that this is the only way to prevent the province from, I don't know, failing worse than we are currently, they will form government. Dr. Snegovsky, am I completely out to lunch there? Or?
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think that's what I was trying to get at quite poorly with the whole conservatives fall in line thing is that, you know, I don't think there's really any appetite to do any soul searching as to what a conservative quote unquote means, because if there was any appetite to do that, it would have been after the 2015 election when there was sort of an identity crisis to be had. But now when you're in government, when you're winning, it's much easier to make the case that we need to stay united. We need to, you have to swallow some things that you're not necessarily going to like, but we need to do them in order to win. And if you do this thing of fracturing and starting your own new party, it's quite selfish because these other people are going to win. So I think it's fun to chat about all of the nice soul searching and meanings of identities and the rest of it. But I think the closer we get to an election, the more brutally utilitarian the politics is going to become. And I think that's the inevitable consequence of people being strategic actors interested in winning, really. And conservative, I think, what does it mean to be a conservative? I think it's less of an ideological thing for a lot of people. And like we've been talking about, an identity thing, and what that actually means doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter that you support this or you support that, or you live here, or you live there. It's just an identity, like, you know, I'm an Oilers fan, or I like lasagna, or whatever, right? Like it's not something that is interrogated much, and it's not really in the interest of political parties. Don't want to interrogate this. Like, it's not in their interest to do so. They want to unite people behind more generic things rather than actually soul searching things. Because the more soul searching you get people to do, the more they might realize that they actually don't want to do X, Y, or Z.
It's interesting that the utilitarian politics, because despite the many, I would argue, horrible things that the UCP government have done that have had huge impact to Albertans' lives. We just did a whole episode on harm reduction, supervised consumption sites. We could talk about the leasing of coal. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on of, oh my God, they did what? But at the same time, Jason Kenney is going to have COVID to blame for the lack of jobs economy pipelines. If the new president of the United States decides to cancel the next pipeline, he gets to say, well, it wasn't my fault. That was those darn liberals from down south. They went and ruined everything. And it fits with his somewhat isolationist, prosperity-based narrative that he's been building. And he can, I think, paint a pretty effective picture of, you know, Albertans are just, we're just the poor people just being victimized by all of these powers outside of control. And we've even seen the Premier's press secretaries and his issue managers have, I laughed for about half an hour when I saw Matt Wolf tweet out, like, look, oil prices, not our fault. It's the international market. That was something that they spend literally almost a year hitting Rachel Notley with, blaming her. So they're not afraid to pivot to any messaging that suits their purpose, regardless of what the evidence or the actual information is behind those conversations. So I'm deeply curious, and look, I'm glad I'm in the position that I'm in coming into the next election. Is there anything regarding your research in particular that you'd like people to know? And secondary to that, where is the best place for people to go to find not only the kind of commentary that you're providing on the and that your team is providing on the Twitter machine? How do people get in touch with you?
The best way to follow the research is to go to commongroundpolitics.ca. It's all commongroundpolitics.ca, and that's our Twitter handle as well. We have some research briefs on there that we've written on all the stuff we've talked about, as well as the politics of COVID, Western alienation, the fair deal, substance use, the economy, discrimination. So we've done pulling on all of this work and broken it down. So if people are interested in some of this stuff, they should have a look at commongroundpolitics.ca. And then my own website is feosnagovsky.ca .org. I should know this, but I'm also, who cares?
If you Google it, you're probably going to be safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any directions that you're taking your research in the immediate future that people should be looking out for?
I think something that I've been really interested in for a while that I'm going to be getting into, and we could maybe talk about this some other time with all the rest of you, because I'd love to hear your thoughts, but it's the role of white identity in all of this. So how much for a long time political behavior has sort of assumed that we think of ethnic minority voters as having identities within their communities, and even people who are non-white as having a collective identity. And it sort of assumes the reference category, what we call the reference categories, what we compare everything else to is white. But in the last 5 years, there's been all this emerging evidence how, in the US at least, that's not really the case, that a lot of white Americans do have this identity that has consequences for political behavior, has consequences for how political elites respond to that behavior. And I think that we have this national mythology in Canada that we are a nation that is really accepting of difference and inclusive. And I think, you know, part of that national mythology is well-deserved. We've done a pretty good job in a lot of ways, but I think we've done a whole lot worse than we thought we have. And it's definitely not the case that people across Canada are universally accepting of difference. And I think the role that has in fostering a sense of identity among white Anglo and white Franco people, something that we haven't really looked at that I'm really interested in digging into.
It's interesting that you bring that up, particularly in light of the controversy that we've seen regarding Aaron O'Toole's remarks. And what's been really telling for me is people's reaction to Aaron O'Toole's remarks. I mean, to me, the reality of the situation is, if we ever want to move forward as the idea of a mosaic that Canada claims to be, we have to get to a place where we say, yep, we did those things, we're going to try to do better. And if we can't acknowledge the fact that Canada was built doing some pretty horrific things to a lot of different groups. It's not just First Nations people. There's a lot of people that the entity that is Canada has mercilessly exploited in order to get where we are today. That there's no changing that. And it's been fascinating to me to watch the same people who are decried the tearing down of historical statues because you shouldn't rewrite history, saying, oh, we just need to forget about this stuff and move past this. It makes me feel uncomfortable. So it's a very powerful point. Deirdre, I saw you switch your headphones here. Hopefully we can get you still. I'm just curious if you have any final thoughts on the conversation, and as well, if you can throw in your various contact informations, because I know that you wear more than a couple of hats.
I do. You know, I think this is a conversation that's going to continue to be interesting to a lot of us who are super involved, but even people who don't necessarily consider themselves to be all that political. So I think it's going to continue to be an interesting conversation. I love the research that has been done by the CBC. I love what's coming out of, and I know you just gave the
Common Ground Initiative.
When they've got some excellent, like they've got other research analyzed as, or sorry, other analyses out of the same research that was done. So there's a whole list. I highly recommend people go and check that out. I'm going to be interested in this conversation, you know, for a long time. That's what I'm interested in, is the political narratives and understanding what those narratives are actually trying to reach. I need the research just as badly. So that's what helps inform me. My contact information, I mean, politicalrnd.ca. The Women of AB Poly podcast is doing just loving these conversations that we're having. It's very fantastic. I'm on Twitter at Mitchell_AB, and we're on Facebook too, Political R&D. So,
and I would just like to say, I know that I've said this a couple of times before, for people interested in different views of politics, where it's not just one middle-aged white dude pontificating most of the time, the Women of AB Poly stuff that's coming out of Political R&D, I cannot recommend enough. It's an amazing podcast, and the personalities and the candor that happens on that show is fantastic. So I just want to all the thumbs up for that. And I also just wanted to go back to the Common Ground Initiative stuff. One of the things that I really appreciate about the Common Ground Initiative stuff is the graphs, the amount of information that comes out of that website, and mostly the Twitter account that I follow, is fantastic, because not only is it way easier to digest than some of the other graphs that I see on Twitter, and on social media, but it's presented initially relatively bias-free, and then all of the politicos weigh in and present all of their different interpretations. So if there's a Twitter follow to come out of this conversation, I highly recommend them. Mr. Scott Harold Payne, whose name I just got right again, it's a mission now. Final thoughts, and where did people find you?
People can find me, my website is Scott Harold Payne, exactly how you would expect all of that to be spelt. Well, I guess except for the Payne, which is a P-A-Y-N-E.
I was just going to say.
P-A-Y-N-E.com. And I am on Twitter at Scott H. Payne, again, P-A-Y-N-E. My final thoughts, I mean, I think I agree this is an interesting conversation. And I hope that people keep having it, and that exactly as Deirdre said, whether you consider yourself to be particularly political or not, this is a conversation for everybody. There has been, it seems pretty evident, very much a fall in line dominant behavior in Alberta and in Alberta politics, and a lot of concerns around well, if these people go over here and assert that they are this, and these people go over here and assert that they are this, and that will spell disaster for the province, and everything will go asunder. And I think the absolute opposite is true. I think that if we had more people who were willing to define who they are, in a way that is true to their heart and sort of true to their beliefs and true to how they actually see themselves and how they actually want to, to be and exist and operate in the province, politically, socially, in all ways. And we saw that bubble up in our politics. I think that could be profoundly positive and really good and could actually result that that fracturing could actually result in a much more functional political landscape and a much more functional province. And that it's, that is the norm in most other places, or certainly more fracturing than you see in Alberta, and that we would benefit from it. So be who you are and do what you do and shout it from the rooftops, and don't be afraid to take that mantle and run forward with it. And this is why ultimately I am very disinclined to get into fights with people who define their politics in a way that doesn't perfectly align with mine, because it's you go do you, man. Fawcett should keep being a centrist. That's fantastic. He should, and Deirdre should keep being whatever the hell she is, which is I don't know how you define yourself, but these conversations are interesting, right? And having conversations with people that are all just like you and all believe the same things that you do. And let's be clear, we don't actually all believe the same things. But when we operate under this illusion that we do and that we're this monolith, not only is that dysfunctional, but it is boring as get out. Everybody be what they should be and stop worrying about fracturing. We would benefit from a little bit of fracturing in Alberta.
Perfect. I only have two little things to add before I let you guys go. First of all, I love the fact that you bring up the idea that we need to have more conversations. I love the fact that you said if we just agreed with everybody how boring it would be, because we do have a lot more in common with people than we realize. And I can't think of any better illustration than what you just said is exactly what ex-UCP press secretary Payman Parsian said when we had him on the show. So there's clearly a lot more common ground than a lot of people realize. The other thing that I just want to say to Dr. Snegovsky, I love the name Common Ground Initiative. I don't know who came up with that or who got the credit.
It wasn't me, but I'm here, so I'll take credit. That's fine.
Okay, you totally should. When I first started playing music in a punk rock band, I played in a horrible, horrible band called Common Ground. And I still have the necklace to prove it. So love the name of your initiative. I want to thank all of you again so much for being willing to take some time on the last Sunday before Christmas. Thank you, COVID, for isolating everybody so I could get all of these people together. I want to just wish all of you, as well as all of our listeners and our viewers, a very Merry Christmas and a very happy holidays. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And that's it for another episode of The Breakdown. Now, we want to just take a quick sec to remind you that we're only able to produce the kind of content that we do because of the support that we receive from our Patreon supporters. So if you appreciate the kind of content that we're trying to produce here, please consider signing up to be one of our Patreon supporters at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab. And if you're listening to the audio version of our podcast, please consider leaving a rating and a review, because it's those things that help us to get the podcast in front of more and more people. And as always, thank you very much for your time.